It's going to be extremely informal and short. The question is, what's my project? My project is the same project that's been for 2 years. I sort of know what it is. You're conceding.
Is this it?
And it is, in fact.
Are you getting involved with internet governance?
Now it looks like the coming field. I need to browse your system a little bit. So the question for me is, I'm trying to write a book. Which at the moment means I'm trying to pre-write a book. I'm trying to do a proposal that involves getting the table contents, right? And being able to explain briefly what the book is about. And the actual contents of the book are coming along okay. I'm working on it for about 2 years, and I've been doing sporadic research and writing up some bits, and some of them get published in one place, and I know I'm going to reuse them. And in the case of Esther Dyson's newsletter, it's all the pieces that went on the cutting room floor, actually the ones that I want to use in the book. So that actually worked out well.
Recycling.
But the question is, what is the damn book about? And when I applied for the Berkman Fellowship, I explained it in terms of metadata, in part because I was under the sway, well, that's not quite true. But when I was thinking about it as metadata, I came across this picture. I didn't come across it, I took it. But actually, let me tell you what the story is. Some of you may have seen this before.
Should we try to figure it out?
Yeah, you can go backwards if you want.
Oh, that's awesome.
So,
I like the fact that it's worn out. Were they pressing the piece of paper? Is that what you were doing?
It was a Ralston gas station. It's one of these newfangled membrane labeled pumps. And so where it says start is actually the button you press. But it's not raised because it's the worst head up the ass UI ever designed. So nobody could figure out to press the start button. So presumably, I mean, I didn't ask, but presumably the local, you know, the owners printed up this little sign on their computer, press start button with arrows pointing at it, press start button. And so that's what happened.
But everybody was pressing the piece of paper.
Yeah, they were all in the, what is actually the label, the start button.
That looks like the start
button. You are here.
Right, so this, I came across this.
But the gas is only $1.69.
I wonder. Back in those glorious days,
please, easy. Yeah, there's some metadata.
So I had been thinking about the book in terms of metadata, so this was a fortunate find. And the question, you know, this raises is, are people stupid? And the answer is, no, people aren't stupid. But we're really bad. Well, so it doesn't mean that we're really bad at metadata. And the answer to that is no, we're fantastic at metadata. And you hold up any, you know, any newspaper, and it's more metadata than it is data. And we're incredibly good at parsing it. We're amazingly sophisticated in figuring out what every little label on the page means, or it says continue, we know, or more, or just a page number. We know that's not part of the article. Well, we had to be taught that, or we had to figure it out. And we know what headlines are and subheads and bylines and advertisements and things on the bottom. It's incredibly complex and rich with metadata. And we parse them instantly. So the problem is not that we're bad at metadata. At least part of the problem is that we're really bad at what happens when metadata becomes explicit. So for about a year, I thought the book was about what happens when good metadata goes bad. Especially what happens when it becomes explicit, which increasingly is the case because we were all warned about the information deluge for 10 years, information anxiety, information smog, all these things. And it really, basically, hasn't happened. We've survived the deluge pretty well. I'm not feeling horribly overwhelmed by information. In part, that's because of Google. It was actually, but in fact, that actually had nothing to do with Google. But that's probably a distraction. So in part, it has to do with Google. But to a larger degree, it's because the information revolution, the information only becomes useful and it becomes manageable only insofar as we have thought through the metadata surrounding it. Which in some instances we have extremely well in large organizations. Some of them, most of them just throw out the data that they're collecting. Some of them actually do make some good use of it. Some of them get into wrangles, like with the census data and what constitutes a race, which is a pretty interesting metadata. Others, we've only been growing beginning to actually, the problem with, for example, digital photos, that now many of us have thousands of them on our hard drives, we will have tens and 50,000 digital photos on our hard drives in just a few years. Right? It's not very hard to build up. Every time I empty my camera onto my hard drive, I add another 120 pictures.
We do take a lot of pictures of things.
I actually don't. I have a very worst. Luckily, I had my camera with me that day. So we're going to have 50,000 photos. Right now, we don't even bother giving them names. They're DSC001, DSC. It may be arranged by time. We may do a little basic foldering, and that works fine, so long as we're the only ones looking at them. But we have not thought this through well at all. All the problems with metadata resurfaced, by the way, in the digital photo issue. Even though it's rational activity would say a little bit of work up front would save us a huge amount of confusion later on. It doesn't matter, we don't do it. We know from the history of computing that human beings will not voluntarily add explicit metadata. We know this from Microsoft Word, where the summary documents, it's a low single digit percentage of people fill in those summary documents. We know it from SGML, completely rational document format that didn't have a chance. Sorry, it keeps on coming up with my theme today.
Why sorry?
Yeah,
I agree with you.
The completely rational document data format that didn't have a chance in hell of being adopted even by the large industries that needed it, much less by ordinary users who would still rock. We know that human beings don't like doing explicit metadata. So here we are in whatever the year is, and we're getting tons of this stuff, and we're being forced to deal with it explicitly, which means we don't want to do it. Take digital photos as an example. Furthermore, there's another problem with explicitness, which is it's disruptive and it's violent. It does violence often to the thing that you're viewing. It's not like shining a flashlight on something, it's like uprooting it. And a quick example of that, this is all what the book is not about, but I'm gonna get to what the book is about.
Thank you for that metadata.
Yeah, well, it's important, yeah. Is the social networks, where everybody in this room recognizes that filling in profiles is just an occasional lie. It's pure self-marketing. It has little relationship to the truth. It's not just because we're venal and vain, although that doesn't hurt. It's also because profiles are trying to get at our interests, and interests are not things that we have that we can then externalize. They're things that happen to us, the way the world calls us. So we're constantly surprised by what we're interested in. As we know from reading a newspaper and finding that we've read all the way to the end of an article about something that we literally didn't know we were interested in. We weren't interested in it until it hooked us. Likewise with books. I mean, I have no big interest in Napoleonic Wars, but War and Peace is pretty interesting. So interests are not things we have, so the attempt to externalize them is always an occasion for creativity and usually self-gratifying. Well, that means masturbation, isn't it? Aggrandizing lies. So here we have social networks that are trying to sort of recreate within their purview the deep, messy, tangly, inchoate, ambiguous relationships that we have in the real world. And they have to fail at that. Now, they will succeed at something else because humans populate formal structures. With all the richness and ambiguity as quickly as we can. So we go into Orkut, we fill in the profile, it's total bullshit. The associations that you make don't work. Network has no relationship to an actual social network. And nevertheless, within 3 days of putting up discussion forums, people will start to form genuine relationships, sometimes quite unexpectedly, around topics. And those relationships are being done through language, which is necessarily messy and ambiguous. Because language isn't code. So, social networks have to fail in what they set out to do in the way that they want to do it, because human relations, the whole core of human relationships is their ambiguity. If I can tell you what our relationship is, then we don't have much of a relationship. If I can characterize that well and completely and clearly, it's not much of a relationship. So at the core, human relationships have to be messy and tangly and rich and ambiguous. Social networks, when they start out, can't be, but something will emerge from them because we'll repopulate that airborne social environment the way on death row the inmates will tap out signals on the walls and form unexpected relationships. So that's not what the book is about. That's what I thought it was about. So what I think now the book is about, the book is about, which is this, those themes. The hard part is, right, for me, and I think for a lot of authors, is figuring out how to slice up themes into chapters that people want to read. That's, you know, that's really hard. It's harder for some of us than for others. You know the book Emergence by Stephen Johnson, who is maybe my favorite writer and my role model in all of life, including writing? Good guy. Emergence is about the new science of emergence, and the subtitle is something like Brains and Cities and something.
Ants.
Ants, maybe?
Didn't I say ants?
Yeah, no. You said Brains and Cities.
Oh, okay. Ants, Brains, and Cities. Steve says that was, because I presented this very problem to him. How the hell do I slice up this book? And I'm probably violating confidentiality here, but hey, what the hell? He said, well, when the first proposal he did for Emergence, the title was, whatever the subtitle was, Ants, Brains, and Cities. And that's what the book was about. And then he realized after he'd actually submitted the proposal that, oh, well, wait a minute. Those three things have something in common. They're all about emergence, so now it became Emergence. So it's the same book, the same topic. It's been cut up into a new way, and in that case, a very, very good way of doing it. Well, I'm having the same sort of issues with this. So here's what I think the book is about. If you were to ask me today, Mary, you've seen several of these events. I would say, you know how the information revolution happened, that everything got digitized and turned into all, making like a model of the world, that all information now is digital? You're not. That's the easy part. Well, it turns out that the ways that we have organizing information that have worked for thousands of years in the real world aren't that successful digitally. I mean, they work okay, but there's lots more you can do once the physical constraints are gone. I'll give you an example of that if you want in a minute. So it turns out there's this new science called ontology that has been looking at this for a while. And it's discovering principles of organization, and people are inventing principles of organization all the time on the web, for example, that are quite different, that violate all of the basic notions about organization that have guided us for a couple thousand years. Those changes in organization, next step is how we classify and organize stuff really, really matters. This is not it's not simply deciding how you're going to divide up your marbles by size or by color. It's fundamental to what something is. All the way back to Aristotle, what something is where it's classified. I can give some examples of that too, but I'm going to take it as, I don't have to argue that at the moment. So this is really important. So here's what the book is about. Changes in the electronic, in the way that we classify and organize electronic information are affecting something very deep and important to us, namely how we live and perceive, organize the world, the real world too. That's what I think the book is about. Okay, thank you.
That's it?
Yeah, I think so. I can tell you what I think the chapters are, but I can, you know.
Wait, say it again. I was expecting that to be part of the warm-up, so I missed it. What was...
Changes in how we organize electronic information.
I heard you, but what are the changes in how we organize
stuff? Yeah,
exactly.
Don't
leave us hanging here.
It's like you're saying...
We want to find out if you're full of shit or not.
I love this, but I guess I need the ants, brains, and cities. I need a few examples at the bottom.
Yeah, no kidding.
To see this thing rising up.
So you know what I'm thinking about? Well, go ahead. I'm sorry. Never mind.
It's like Stephen Johnson saying, you know, there's this thing called emergence.
It's really, really important. Thank you very much.
Yes.
What?
That's not
even... Far out, dude. Case studies, right? Chapters in which you show how changing a classification scheme suddenly took something.
Yeah, that would be one way of doing it.
But what are you going to look at?
Not quite. I've been collecting for a couple years now case studies, what you're calling case studies, which I can give you some examples of. But digital photos are one case study. What type of case study, for example? I've been to the Benton Archive and the Corpus, one's physical, one's electronic, and that's looking at their closet. Taxonomists, and I've been in their cold vault, and that's another type of case study. I'm going to go see...
But you tell us something about that, can you?
Let me tell you what I think the organization of the book is. Roughly. Chapter 1, classification matters. It's really important. We're lumpers and splitters. That's how we spend all of our time. And some of us lump more than we split, some of us split more than we lump, but we're lumpers and splitters. By the way, I won't get this quite right, but the next chapter is something like, it might be the new science of ontology, and talk about that for a bit. There's a chapter that looks at how we label things, which is take a step back. Labeling is the first, labels imply classification schemes, but there's, we label everything. We're the most labeling society in history. We label our fruit. Every piece of fruit has a big label on it. Well, that's unusual. So how did that happen?
Is it edible, that label?
No, they're not edible. Yeah, it's... and one of the points of... I'm sorry, I'm doing this long form. I wanted to be quick, but I'm going to be slightly long form. One of the points about that is that labels work insofar as they become implicit again. So the National Highway, I forget what it is, the government agency that creates new highway signs and new highway symbols, has about a 10-year process. They develop them. They decide they need a new highway symbol. They develop it. For the first few years, they put on the symbol, the graphic, that's what they're testing, of course, and the label, the text label. And their aim is, over time, to be able to take the text label off. That's a sign of success. So the sign of success is when things become implicit again, when they sink back into the... on labels, then the chapter on the history of trees, since I seem to be focusing mainly on trees as the way that we have organized things. So clearly, that's not the only way.
Trees like oak trees or trees like...
Yes. No, organizational trees, hierarchy.
So no, I don't know. Yeah, like, my amazing good, 100 good years spell. Ago, oak trees weren't called oak trees.
The history of okay. History of organization.
Okay, fine.
Oak trees versus willows versus viney things.
I got it, okay.
Okay, history of trees, why is it... You can express the same information that's in almost all the information that's in a tree in a blueprint. Containers, trees do something special. They have value access. They also allow for a type of very fluid context raising, shifting up and down. Really very impressive. And they are throughout our culture. They're how we define words, they're how we define institutions. So, history of trees. In order to show...
Are trees and outlines the same thing, basically? Because
yes.
Winers
yes.
really into outlines
yes.
are sort of a fundamental thing.
Yeah. Not just me, for crying out loud.
What?
It's not just me.
No, I'm not saying just you.
Yes, many of us, yes, trees, outlines, the best tree for my sorts of examples are ones that have a value chain going up, and then have,
I want to know what ontology is.
Me too.
Ontology.
Not oncology. People often get that mistake.
There you go.
Although in concept it's very close. It's very, very close to oncology.
Yes, a number of bad associations. And taxonomy is close to taxidermy. So there are taxidermy and oncology are two things I would say. By odd coincidence, my doctoral dissertation in the field of philosophy was on Heidegger's ontology of things. What philosophers mean by ontology has nothing to do with what computer science people.
Oh, okay. It's not clear that computer science people mean anything by it other than we want to take over the world and tell everybody how to do everything. I mean, that's kind of what ontology sounds like to computer scientists.
Well, okay, so I need to maybe pin that down a little more.
Okay.
Okay, so history of trees, and then the part that, which is what's different in the new way of organizing. And I don't have, one of the problems I have here is that I'm looking for three or four top-level statements, and I can't figure out how to do them. This is purely a writing technical problem. How to do them in a way that I can go through them in order in a chapter without having to say everything first. So they are things like we can now file objects on more than one branch. At one point, the working title of the book was A Leaf on Many Branches, but it sounded too poetic, like small pieces of Lucy Joyner's. Anyway, we can put things on multiple branches. It's very interesting that we're able to do that if you accept, as I will argue, that the very nature of what something is defined by its position on a tree. That's true for Aristotle, that's true in terms of language quite frequently. Anyway, so if you're able to do it on multiple branches very fluidly, that's to me interesting. In the past, Dewey Decimal System is owned Right? It is owned. You can't fuck with it. It's the OCLC, whatever that stands for. It's theirs. In the, is it 200s, the top level, the religion category, how many subcategories are there for Christian topics? Any guesses?
98.
I hate you. 88. Very good. You just shut up, okay? How many for Jewish topics?
Three.
I'm giving you a hint. One. How many for Muslim topics? You can jump in.
Zero.
One. How many for Buddhists? Zero. You have to go down to miscellaneous, where they share the tree with Rosicrucians and Scientologists. Why don't they change this? Is it because they're stupid racists? The answer is obviously not. They don't change it because there's more value in the stability of the tree than there is in trying to get it to reflect contemporary mores and so forth. Right? You lose interlibrary. It takes years to update the thing. If you decide to make the change, you lose interlibrary loans, you lose the skill set of the librarians. It's more important that it be fixed than it be. So that's another characteristic that changes. Categories now, the category trees that we use are shared. In the future, you know, already, we're all used on computers being able to resort things by clicking on a column. We used to have photo albums. We will not have photo albums. So don't have photo albums generally on computers. Right? You may make one specially for grandma or something, but generally you're going to want to be able to do searches across and find a picture of Aunt Betty on the beach sometime in the 1990s or whatever. So we lose. There's a communal aspect, a shared aspect to memory that we're going to lose as well. Taxonomies have been owned. There's a guy I know who is an academic. He organizes his books by color, by the color of the binding. It's like Roy G. Biv's office. You go in, he has them done by spectrum. And you ask, why? In part, it's because he's a young guy and it's funny and he knows that. But in part, he says, I have a very well-defined, well-developed color sense, and that's how I remember books. So you go into his office and you're trying to find, he has weird books next to each other, I must say. You're trying to find the book by whatever, you're stuck with his classification. It's not true for electronic information, so it's not owned anymore by an individual. And I forget, there's other stuff like that. I believe at the moment that each of those stuff like that becomes a chapter. So unowned classification, so I'm trying to come up with a little better title than that, but is then a chapter in which you talk about the arrangement by color, or anything, et cetera. Okay, now I think I'm done again.
What would be really neat is if you could find a way to organize it in one of these new methods. I guess it would take being outside of print and doing it digitally yourself, but I mean, that'd be kind of cool to not have a book that's kind of as linear or as hierarchical as you imagine.
I totally want linear. Yeah. That's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I mean, that's just a brain. That's just a brainstorm idea. But secondly, how much are you going to discuss user interfaces and kind of, because I guess when you're looking at a computer screen, it's really hard to gauge when you have a list of things how important all those things are relative to each other. You can like think of a blog role versus say Craigslist, which has bigger names for where Craigslist is more popular. And I mean, does that somehow incorporate into this? Because I mean, that's. It's the visual representation of all these hierarchies and organizations.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to do a chapter on UI for a few reasons. Main one is that there are much better chapters on UI than in fact, there's a better book on UI by my favorite writer and hero, Steve Johnson. Mm-hmm. All hail Steve Johnson. But the stuff that UI designers now are inventing, or have been inventing for 10 years, tend to be very market driven. You would not get this from a computer UI designer. At least not for long, right?
You did.
Yeah, you used to.
You did. That is a computer UI. I mean, it literally is.
Well, you hope that the market will drive those UIs out.
But we're a computer UI, you press start, and it would then say run. And
then all people Exactly.
And it would happen.
Exactly. Right.
Shut down.
Right. And credit card would be folded into the start.
My recent gas tanks.
Yeah. Shut down. Maybe the most famous example. I'm sorry, I still laugh every time I think about them deciding to put the shutdown on the start menu. But UI design is a really important place to look, for me to look, because that's where the innovations happen, including innovation that the market completely rejects, like Xerox parts, Insight is the next, attempt to give us hyperbolic trees and document walls that they reintroduce every 4 years and nobody ever wants, because even though in theory it's a nice UI, and apparently we don't think that. But yeah, no, that's absolutely there. So I assume that will be throughout.
Question. So it seems like at the highway sign, the traffic highway office example, the metadata seeping back into implicit, like there's the time element of what happens when there's this sort of data jamming and categories get confusing and you have to make rational decisions about things that used to already fit in bundles that we understood, right? And so it seems like part of the argument that you're making is to show the confusion. Is that?
It's in part to show the confusion. It's more to show, this is a question that I got when I thought I was done.
Yeah.
It's, there are changes to the, look at how we categorize things and think about the most fundamental things about it. For example, one object, a tree, a thing has a place. That place is determined by the owner of the taxonomy. That stays stable and fixed. It's the same for all people. And it's capable of being made explicit without damage. Every one of those things turns out to be subverted now. So it's not simply that things are confusing. It's that there's a new type of clarity that undoes some basic assumptions about how the world is.
Except that it hasn't resulted in any clarity yet, right?
Well, it does. It does locally. We learn how to use the new computer-based stuff without too much difficulty, except when it's really brain dead and stupid, in which case we make fun of it and it goes away or gets incorporated into Windows.
But David, I'm a little unclear. Is there a philosophical kind of inquiry here in a, you're talking about your friend Aristotle in the sense of classifications of things and, animal, vegetable, mineral, or the way the mind in different intellectual traditions kind of group things in a philosophical way, or are you trying to simulate, or are you trying to figure out how, in a Steve Johnson sort of way, and he is a great writer, no question about it, new to me, thanks to you, but to simulate the way brain mechanism does these things.
It's the former.
The sorting of.
For me, it's the former. Mainly just because that's what I'm interested in. There is a brain component of this that I want to know more about, which I'll talk about in a second. But the first thing you said is what I'm interested in. Here we have technology and an informationalizing of the world that's being done on a staggering scale.
Right.
Like marshaling for a world war, the way that we've been determined to bring everything into the digital world. We have a new way of new ways of organizing that subvert the new to the world. Right? You can organize electronic data in ways that you can't organize real world data. Most in a lot, the Bettman Archive, which is a physical archive in a cave in Pennsylvania, to be preserved, thanks to Bill Gates.
This is where Cheney's been hiding out all the time.
In fact, right. He was there, in his little gnome outfit.
That's true.
No. But could be.
But he has been hiding out in a cave in Pennsylvania.
Is that right?
Oh yeah, they've identified the bunker, right?
This is the Iron Mountain facility. Mm-hmm. Literal cave. Being kept at currently 40 degrees and going down to minus 4 degrees Fahrenheit in one room in a card catalog in the front. The possibility of organizing that data, that metadata, the card catalog, is very limited. All right, if you want to find a picture of Albert Einstein, it better be on a card that's labeled Einstein. If you want to find pictures of everybody who's sticking their tongue out, you can't do it. Okay, there's that one famous Einstein one, but who knows what else it is.
Right.
I jumped in. Is it really different in structure? I'd argue you can create such a catalog that allows you to find the picture where someone shows his thumb. It seems to me it's not really a difference in quality, especially this example. It's, you know, we are not that efficient in searching the catalog, or it's just a question of efficiency that we're not able to create, to structure the information that way, or the metadata.
Well,
so to what extent, I think that seems to be the hard question, is that the shift from the transition from analog to online or to digital really something that structurally changes the way you organize information by metadata, and not just in terms of quantity, efficiency, you know, that we can search basically every bit. That seems to be obvious, but in theory we could do the same.
In theory you could do anything, right? But you could take the contents of a supercomputer, write them out on index cards, hire graduate students and do exactly what the computer does. But right. It's impractical. And likewise, it's impractical. And how do we know it's impractical? Because we haven't done it. But to file in a card catalog under more than three topics.
But I guess my question is there more than this element that it's impractical? No. My guess would be there could be more, right? So I thought that could be an interesting thing to think about. But there are shifts in quality and in structure rather than just in is it practical or not, is it efficient or not.
Well, I guess what I'm saying is it is merely a matter of practicality, but the practicality is so overwhelming that the digital, the digitizing of it allows us to do things that are totally impractical in the real world. I'm not much bothered by the fact that, well, you could, but it, you know, what's his name, took the Encyclopedia Britannica, the great books guy, from the 50s and 60s, Sadler, right, and decided that the Encyclopedia Britannica really needed to be organized not by top-level topic, but through these threads. And so they did that, and it took them years to do it. It was a huge project, and now we have, I forget what they call it, sorry. You can do that, but it took an army of scholars N years to do it, and then that's the only one that we have. So in theory, everybody could do their own, but there isn't hardly enough lifetimes to do it.
Right, but just to give an example, you know, I could imagine that a system in the digitally networked environment is more strict in the sense how categories are built and how the element is allocated to each category. So, for instance, the Britannica example is nice as well because you have a reader, you have a human being categorizing something, basically allocating metadata to a piece of information. Is that different when we talk about the computer age, the digital network age? That's a structural shift because here it is automated and here you have a person doing that with some considerations, with some sense of flexibility. So that's an example, what I would say, and a different error rate, of course. So, you know, I would say these are structural shifts.
You're right, that is,
that's just one example.
We're going to have so many directories, it's going to blow your mind. In the web, we've decided that there's Yahoo and DMOZ and LookSmart and a couple of others. And it's totally the wrong model. It's very much the paper-driven model. I think what you're going to have is you're going to have tools that allow people to do small bits of taxonomy, not the overarching, the bit of taxonomy in which they're an expert on. Okay, and then you put these things together in whatever way you want to. So if I choose to delegate to you on all areas relating to Stephen Johnson books, so all I do is just point to your directory. And then how does the web know to rate your directory as of Stephen Johnson as authoritative? Same way Google determines if my page on Stephen Johnson is authoritative. And so it's going to do the same thing to directories that it does to everything else. It's going to decentralize. Okay, and so I fully agree, you know, I had this experience with Outliners, and much to Jim's, You know, the same experience.
I love Outliners.
I know, in the 80s, here's what happened was, is that all the reviews on Outliners would begin with, remember those things you hated when Mrs. McGillicuddy made you do them and how you always cheated and you did the outline after you wrote the story? Well, they're back, okay? And of course, that was exactly the wrong thing to say to people about outlines because it brought up this first early experience of dishonesty, right? But the beauty of outlines on a computer is that they're infinitely malleable. You can change them. They really are the realization of outlines that were on paper, but they never worked on paper. So that's, I mean, I think taxonomy, I'm agreeing with everything you said, is that the tools for taxonomy haven't really existed until you got to the computer. Now you've got the tools for taxonomy. That's the outliner. And you have the aggregator, which is Google. And if Google doesn't want to do it, I'll make the, let's do it with MSN, you know? Google can do it. We can do this.
What about the ultimate? Right.
What?
I don't know if he's probably going to say anything, but that's what I was told. Beware the camera.
Yeah, sure. Oh, it's been on you a few times. So.
Did it work out?
Yeah.
So we were trying to keep the path clear.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. No, it's an art thing. You want to get all the, it's just got to be real.
You want coffee?
I'm sorry.
So let me try briefly. First of all, yes. I mean, that's what's exactly what's going on with the semantic web, as far as I can tell. The plan for grand ontology has broken down
they
into
don't,
local
they,
into...
they don't. I swear they don't have a roadmap for this, and all these people don't understand this idea.
I'm actually agreeing. The grand plan has fragmented, and the best they can do now is hope that there will be local taxonomies.
Well, that's the right idea.
Second of all, I love is the contrast with Corvus, who owns the Bettman archive. Corvus is all digital. They're processing some thousands of photographs, images a day. They have 15 full-time meta taggers. They have a 70,000-word hierarchical thesaurus. You go through and you say, well, that gets filed under gas pump, it gets filed under automotive, it gets filed under, and then they'll start thinking about it gets filed under irony, it gets filed under sadness or humor or whatever, and they make subjective judgments about it. That seems to be. So in their taxonomy, it turns out that it used to be that when you went to unemployed people, listed one of the categories underneath that was housewives, which they have since changed because they realized, you know, times change. And if you browse under carnivore still, you will find lions, tigers, alligators, and an Easter basket filled with kittens, which technically they are carnivores, of course, although they recognize this as, again, an inappropriate way of categorizing. They're not out to do a zoological taxonomy. People in it. So they evolved this taxonomy that's quite comprehensive, but is totally tuned to their needs, which is absolutely appropriate, but means it doesn't scale across the rest of our needs, which is to agree with you and to agree with Dave. I'm sorry, Jim, I totally cut you off.
No, that's fine. I just was... So I just have two points. One is, I think this issue of how fast you can do something is really fundamental. And there are times when, if you can do something a lot faster, it's not just a quantitative shift, it's a qualitative shift. So driving around changes our notion of geography and space. Escalators change the nature of how shopping environments work, because they connect floors. And so the ability to do these searches very rapidly with almost no transaction cost, I think, makes a fundamental qualitative shift. So I just want to sort of say, yeah, it's efficiency, but efficiency to a certain level makes a qualitative shift. The second thing that I think is really important about this is the nature of self changes. And that, to me, is the high-level bit here, listening to you, okay? It's that now I can redefine myself every few hours because in some sense, myself is how I look at the world. Myself is my categories for looking at the world. And now it's just so easy for me to decide, I'm going to be, a radical conservative, okay, and go on the web and search that way, and, it's all there. And I can sort of poetically live into that world, And the same with, I can be, whatever, sort of pick it. And so to me, that's the, that's kind of the big deal of all these things, is that it's not, in a sense, bubbling up from being able to shift these things around in different ways. It's that given that capability, I have a whole new way to kind of experiment into different ways of seeing things, different ways of thinking about things, and in fact, constructing myself.
And I fully believe that we are our understanding of the world, not our understanding of ourselves. So I'm very much on board with that. Another possible sort of big bit in this, top level bit?
Higher order bit.
High order bit. Thank you. Let me get this techie talk down.
It's funny.
I don't know. Which is, if you change, trees are so fundamental, hierarchical trees are so fundamental to our institutions. I mean, you can't, it's hard to find one that doesn't have some form. That if they become a degenerate form, so to speak, in the digital world, then one has to wonder what effect that has on how businesses are organized, how government is organized, and the rest. I don't have any idea about that, unfortunately, but I'll probably end up sort of waving my hands at it to make the book seem more important.
Well, but business is already getting reorganized vastly by the ability to reconfigure networks of suppliers and networks of customers and collaborators. I mean, it's at a macro scale, but you know, I think it's really actually fundamental. I mean, people are inventing all sorts of new ways.
Hyper-localization.
Hey.
Three things, okay? There are three fundamental views of information, right? Taxonomy, chronology, and indexing, search. And I think that's, I mean, those are your answer cities in your brains.
Well,
that's just my little, that's my little contribution towards your, I mean, I'm very, okay, chronology, which is weblogs, reverse chronology, right? You know, or the New York Times is chronology. They do, the New York Times has an issue every day, right? Okay, so chronology, taxonomy, which we all understand, that's just everything arranged in a hierarchy, okay? And then there's indexing, which is the back of the, and it's the front of the book and the back of the book and the front page of the newspaper. And it's the same, you know, I have not found a fourth one yet.
Sounds like there's actually only two.
Yeah.
And chronology is just another way of taxonomizing something.
Well,
you
can
ask to do the weblog in but, alphabetical.
Yeah, but we're, like, this is a soft thing, not a, like, mathematical thing here, you know. In other words,
that's
there...
That's not a grand unified theory. That
no, I like that there are three. I really... My brain wants... My brain thirsts for three. Okay?
How about
I wake up in the morning not wanting to look at the segment of the tree that's allocated today. I want to know what's new.
Roy G. Biv does it all by color.
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. I'm trying to help the guy. I mean, I want his book to be great.
David, I want to know...
You wouldn't say that now four, alphabetical chronological.
There's that, too.
What can computer information, computer power, tell you about sort of reordering the real connection thing? For example, you know, reverse engineering evolution, or reverse engineering, you know, our connection to each other and back to Adam. We'll be able to figure this out with the DNA one of these days, you know, exactly.
And it won't look like a tree.
Well, it'll certainly look like a revised definition of the tree. Right?
Well, Stephen Jay Gould's where he says he hated trees, says it's a bush. But if you actually were to follow this, it would be the individual story of N billion creatures. It would be incredibly messy. So maybe one of the chapters I've thought about is also on messiness, on having messy organizations. So what I'm hoping...
Stephen Jay Gould would say the human, vast human... organism, every one of us since time began. Is a bush not a tree?
Ask the Mormons.
Okay.
Ask the Mormons, are they building that?
I'm a Clinton.
Mm-hmm. You're a Clinton.
Well, you're not a bush.
Yeah.
Sorry. Down with bushes. Shrub. Yeah, shrub.
And, well, yeah, but it gets messier and messier. Mm-hmm. There's a dotted line between the International Atomic Energy Agency, the Pentagon, and the Security Council. And I was looking for examples of trees, so I came across this, and there's this dotted line there, which got me curious. And it turns out that the dotted line is there because the Soviets, when this was formed, wanted to have the agency report to another agency over which the Soviets had a veto. So even though it doesn't make much sense, it actually reports to some other more sensible agency, it got a dotted line there. So the Mormons are tracking genealogical trees, and those are fairly nice trees, but there's lots of messiness in them, and there's more and more dotted lines in those as well.
Forgive me, I don't know the Mormon case. What
well, they, the big genealogists.
Yeah, they're
totally
it's part of their religion to track all this.
Terms who goes into, who gets in.
Yeah.
And then they use it to actually go back and sort of rebaptize people as Mormon.
Uh-huh.
Like,
yeah.
Back through history.
Yeah. few years ago, they were rebaptizing Jews as a favor.
But then there's a little problem with that, and they stopped that.
Yeah.
But Jewishness, the definition of Jewishness, defined by mothers, is a tree thing too, right?
It is, but why does it go through the mother? It's because, sorry, it's turned into a Jew. It's because, right, you couldn't tell who the father was.
Well, the father is always uncertain, right?
Right, so where's your tree there, you know? I mean, that's, if you actually draw those relationships, it would not be, it would be really...
Did that happen tree. After the Crusades? I didn't know that.
As a result of the Crusades.
Really? As a result of Raven.
Yeah.
Like that. Wow.
So here's the...
Oh, I don't know.
So who knows who's a Jew?
Thinking back to Howard's talk today, I'm thinking about this factory farming thing that I seem to belong to the way.
Yes.
That was a good riff, Jonathan.
Do it again. Play it again.
Because part of what you're offering up, aside from just a safer work hypothesis adapted to the syntactics of classification rather than just the semantics of language, to put it in linguistic terms, is that the internet is changing everything, because you can now slice and dice so many ways that a taxonomy which used to be dominant, like Dewey, now just becomes one of a zillion taxonomies, and basically there's a taxonomy of taxonomies, and people can choose how they want to search, or they don't even have to use a taxonomy, they can just use an index or a concordance. I wonder if the factory farming response to that is, isn't it true that there's basically a power law at work where 80% of the people, 80% of the searches run are basically governed by a small fragment of the search engine market. It's still all Google right now, and 3 years from now, if it's not Google, it'll be all something else. And then, even within Google, everybody's searching for the same stuff. You can account for 80% of the searches on Google in the top 10 literally identical searches. Right? Britney Spears is like half of all searches right there.
Half mine.
Right. And I'm searching it. Maybe something's changed.
You should get a feature for Britney Spears. You could be updating all the time.
Yeah, right. And 5 years from now, it won't be Britney Spears, but it'll be something else that governs half of all searches, and the next half of the remaining half will be governed by three more. And does that power law then suggest that there's some other structure or correlation at work? That this gets back to Jerry's choice question. Like, no matter how many choices you offer, this dazzling array of searches that's a form of data smog or overwhelming, but we don't feel it. We feel, oh, I have great freedom, but I just search for what I search for. But in fact, we're still all lining up to each other like iron filings around a magnet. That's got to be in opposition to the idea of the boundless, endless freedom of individuality.
Yes, because things tend towards the implicit and the easy, and those two things, things become explicit when they break, quote the great Nazi Heidegger, and that's right. So things necessarily tend towards the invisible, the implicit, and the easy, and so we'll continue doing our power law 80% searches from Britney. And by the way, in 5 years, I still will be searching for Britney. I promise you. But
you say that now.
But no, because I'm not just thinking about this in terms of search engine searches. I'm also thinking about how social networks, which are maybe a better example. Social networks already are smoggy, necessarily happy. And as these get moved on to computers, we're going to be faced with, and non-tree-like, by the way, we will be faced with decisions to make about how we want to see or possibly reconstitute our social network. And likewise with digital photos, likewise with the other stuff that touches us, that is becoming digitized.
But don't you figure almost everybody, 80%, will organize their digital photos the same way after there's a shakeout? Maybe it'll be OPhoto, maybe something else. But
and
then
how
suddenly
do it?
The people that run OPhoto will determine.
And it will sink back into implicitness. And we are in a special moment as we are. We're having to confront this stuff explicitly. This is
right.
Not a continuing issue. This is a special one. But OPhoto or whatever will still enable us to reorg it like that. And so we will become incredibly impatient at trees that refuse to change.
It occurs to me that there's a, I mean, I think that's correct. The thing that like I wasn't talking about a minute ago, and I was talking about sort of post-conventional, you know, definitions of self and things, self-definition of self, is that people want to be social, and they want to be, as you say, aligned like iron filings with each other. But it also seems to me that we're not, while there are these parallel effects, it's interesting that they're breaking down in some other media, like they're breaking down in the, you know, from broadcast TV to cable TV and stuff. And there is an argument that says that, right, well, people are organizing themselves in communities. They organize themselves in kind of style communities more and more. You know, like, you know, so there's sort of like, there's, you know, there's hippie sub, you know, there's the sort of new Brooks book, you know, which is a little too pop, but it's, you know, there's crunchy, munchy suburbs, and there's, you know, Weston-like suburbs, and there's, you know, and basically people are exercising their ability to choose. It's some kind of balance. They're not all becoming one thing. They're becoming, they do in fact want to be with other people and conform in a way and build a style, but not completely, not one.
Well, I think what you said, the fact that we are at a special moment, I think is really important. We do have to rethink these things now, and we won't later on.
I'm still thinking through your answer.
Why is it important?
It's important to how I present what the book is about.
He's writing a book, for crying out loud, right? Wow. I mean, it's the end result.
No, it's the end result, but it's also, it's...
you're going to sell a lot of copies.
There's a marketing exercise, so I want to sell a lot of copies.
Exactly.
But on the other hand, it's also, and to me, well, I'm not saying more important, it's, I don't know how to evaluate these things.
You want more flow for your blog.
I want more flow. it's the argument of, it's the narrative. Right? And it's the intellectual narrative of the book. So it's important.
That's
important content point. You know, that this is not going to be. We're not going to be in a perpetual thing, a perpetual state of flux about how we organize the world. But we have brought ourselves to a point where we need now to make really important decisions that are going to last for a long time. Because we're going to sink back in. The successful decisions will become implicit. They'll become ordinary and obvious very quickly. Because that's what we do.
So, is this? Are we redoing the Dewey Decimal System then right now? Is that what's about to happen? And then we're going to be locked in potentially to the next, to Dewey 2?
No, I don't.
Or is there going to be no more Dewey? You're saying that
I think there's Amazon right now. You look on Amazon, and Amazon tells you what books are next to other books.
Yeah.
Right. Basis of 18 different ways.
Right. And there can be many, many, many.
And that's much better than Dewey, although it's, you know, it's no longer external who's making what choice to taxonomize, or whether it's based on you, or based on others, or based on some objective.
If you were building an electronic library now, you would give the books their Dewey Decimal Numbers as a legacy app, and then you'd figure out how you actually want to let people browse through it. And it seems to be pretty clear that you would want to allow people to do their own, maybe you call it my favorites, an entire art portfolio, but even just that very, very local.
The physical library still has to array them on the shelves, unless they have squads of people rearrange the books just for you, then it's got to be one size fits all.
Yeah. Yeah.
How does Amazon do their basic taxonomy now? Do you know?
Excellent question.
They have everything. They have a Swiss Army knife. They have a taxonomy that is top-level categories. I don't know where they ripped off the scheme from. But, you know, history, United States, Civil War, early. They have people who bought this also bought that. They have Listmania, where they solicit from people to group things together. They have, here are your past purchases. Here are your past purchases. You already bought this book. Oh, yeah, I forgot. In fact, I already bought it. I read this book. I reviewed the book.
I wrote the book.
It's a great question.
That's an example of your... thing in action, where you get to pick even on an instant by instant. It's not like I get to visit Barnes & Noble, do it one way, and Amazon to do it another. I have 18 different ways on one page.
Yeah, and I've talked about Listmania, that's a really interesting point, too. That's Dave's distributed for me.
Okay, I'm not.
It's weird that you can like browse people you don't know in their wish lists and then buy for them if you want. Like they just get a random book from you.
Yeah, it happens all the time to me.
You lie so convincingly.
David, you should do this again and we'll write the next chapter. Yeah. We'll do it chapter by chapter, man.
I'd love to.
We get acknowledged though, right? In the
it's all me, baby. Maybe I should mention that.
But your opening story about why people lie on their profiles, which apparently the book is not about.
Yeah.
I think that's an interesting question. That's actually when people in the room were most totally tracking exactly what you were saying, which is how you faked out Dave on what the book was about. So some way to kind of work that in.
Oh, it's definitely it.
Okay.
I'm not sure what the lead story is. At the moment, it's been switching all over the place. It's about why isn't everything miscellaneous? Is the question.
Well, the thing I see
starts with the kitchen organization. Okay?
What I see unifying the two things is basically Freud. It's saying that like what you think you don't think. It's what you have to have elicited from you either through years of therapy or revealed preferences that show what you must have been thinking. And that's true both about filling out your profiles and to make the point that the taxonomy controls you rather than you walk the taxonomy. That both are the ways of determining how you think or what you prefer. Books. This is on a list of books enjoyed by communists. Would you like to purchase it? I mean, that's the taxonomy telling you whether you like the book rather than the other way around.
And actually part of the point that I want to make also is the externalization of interest. The interests are not things internal to us, they are responses to, which is a big part of the profiles. In addition, you can't list your interests because you don't have interests. You know, if I asked you to list your top 10 interests, you'd probably come up with like 4 or 5. Right. 3 of them would be bullshit, my family, don't do that.
Right, so this book, so just building on what Jonathan said, because I think that's really right, is, and not to harp too much on the self thing, but I think it's about what, you've got a theory of self, okay? And that theory of self is that self is things that call to you. And it's sort of a second order, then you can ask, do they call to you because of internal Freudian things, or they call to you because you plopped into the environment and it pulls you along. But it really is kind of a theory of self. And so what you're saying is, when people have to fill out a profile, there's a kind of falsification that has to go on there. That's not really themselves, But it's kind of a theory of self, right? And
I'm talking to self at evident.com.
Yeah.
That was a joke.
It seems to me there is a unified, even in your history, even in what you studied in college, and that you're into Heidegger and that stuff, which is all about that, right? It is the Worfian version in philosophy.
I don't have to find out what the hell we're talking
about. The links in your box. I said it to you.
Okay, thank you. I have a passing familiarity with the morphing and information theory. I can't.
Most people seem to think it's Lieutenant Commander Worf these days.
You did send it to me in Klingon. I don't see that as being the focus of the book. A book is about classification. The reason that it's important is exactly because it becomes more important to me because I don't think, as you're saying, I don't think classifications are things that cells have. And cells are almost exactly contemporaneous, coextensive with the categorization, classification, way that we understand the world.
Right. So. But Chris's question, which I think maybe you misread, which was sort of, I thought was the question, why should we care? Not why should we care about why you care about this conversation, but why should we care about this research?
Absolutely.
I think the reason I care, I don't actually care too much about classification schemes, but I do care about self, self and society, self and me, so I think it's like if something's messing with who I am in some ways that I don't really understand, I'm sort of interested in that. Mm. Right?
Okay, why should I care about this book has been at the heart of the craft side of it, trying to figure out how to write the little stuff from the beginning. and then I failed that most egregiously.
David, thank you. Good luck.
Thank you.
It's going to be a kick-ass book, David. It's going to be a kick-ass book.
If I can ever figure out exactly what it's about.
Lots of jokes. Well, you know what? Just go ahead and write it, and we'll figure it out for you.
We'll figure it out for you.
The whole question. Why not? I think that's fine.
We'll write chapter one. You write all of the chapters.
No, we'll write the copy for the sleeve and the back.
Write the blurb. That'd be great.
We'll write the blurb.
This book is
say, look, this guy wrote the Clue Train Manifesto. What else do you need to know?
That's right.
Exactly.
The whole.
You know what? I have a title for the book. Okay, Clue Train Manifesto Volume 2. That would work, wouldn't it? Subtitled, like, kick out the other three guys. Who needs right. them?
Yeah. Do you know George Lakoff, dude?
I'm sorry.
Do you know George Lakoff?
Yeah, but that was some stuff.
Does he connect with this at all in the sense of hierarchy and sort of... mind and body. We're done. I was just thinking, though, that the whole matter of hierarchies and including, you know, human dominion over the animals, over the earth, and then the trees that sort of fall into that, is so interesting. And I just wondered, you know, but I think Lakoff would say. Lakoff would be interested in all of these subjects.
He's written brilliantly about almost everything.
Yeah.
That's his problem. So it's a good lead, and I will... his big book, Philosophy, whose name I don't remember, but is really just amazingly good. I'm certain...
Well, where mathematics comes from, and where why up is up and down is down, you know. But he relates it all to experience and body, too. Physical function. Anyway.
Good tip.
Good luck.
Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. I'm going to know what the freaking table of contents is.
Yeah.
But I still don't know why anybody cares.